Poetry Prize and Adobe Paisano Fellowship. She directed the literature program at the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center in San Antonio, where she developed the San Antonio Inter-American Book Fair. A former Wallace Stegner Fellow in Poetry at Stanford, she received an NEA Poetry Fellowship in 1993. Currently, she's Executive Director of the Poetry Center and the American Poetry Archives at San Francisco State University. I'm particularly delighted to introduce her because she, like myself, struggles with the hard work of running an arts organization in a culture which doesn't provide much support for the arts, and in that way not only practices her art, but tries to give something back to the art of poetry itself, and for that we're all very grateful to her. So please welcome Rose Katakalos.
Thank you. It is wonderful to be on this side of this podium. I'd like to also send our love to Rosemary Puerta. We were just talking yesterday about being worried about our parents and about the possibility of being far from them. Rosemary's about to move to Minnesota, and that they might become ill, and for that to happen this very day is painful, but at least she is here, which is very good. I'd like to begin with a poem by Luis Omar Salinas, who is in this anthology called after Aztlan Latino Poets of the 90s. And I read this poem in a class that Rosemary had yesterday at East Campus. Is there an East Campus of Pima College? And I was really entranced with some of the resonances that happened as a result of a discussion we were having about film and how one can confront values in social values in film that that are perhaps more difficult to confront personally or with a performer in an eye-to-eye contact. So I remembered this poem and read it to them and would like to read it again. It's called Late Evening Conversation with My Friend's Dog Moses After Watching Visconti's The Innocent. Moses, who is there to save us from the crickets, those small gods in armor, nagging some vague truths, transient as Visconti's light through the arbors of grapes and lilac? I think the loquats have been sleeping like our guardian angels, and who is to say what the moon is thinking? Or the lost fragments of our hearts? It could be the end of air in liquor, rain, or self-indulgence. You could complain about each leaf of the apricot falling. I, too, could catalog each woman that failed to save me. And we both could be as melancholy as clouds, Moses. There are no prophecies in the sky, only this earth. It's gray at our fingertips. Let's stop bitching about death and the light of the lovers on the veranda next door. I want to explain, as you should too, about the meekness of all the nights that have passed, burnt out stars or storms. We must take control of the air and breathe as only we can, like the icy throat of comets. Listen to me, Moses, we're not as biblical as rain, but our transgressions go to the sea in search of speech. Salt or otherwise, blood or otherwise, things remain the same as long as we watch the fiddles turn. And despite the women, the rise and fall of French cinema, the heart must dance like lightning, burn and save itself. I'm going to read a poem that Allison asked about, actually, which I haven't read in a long time. And I like to talk about this this poem because it has a story behind it. Some years ago, Maya Angelou came to San Antonio to do a series of performances and readings. And she made a great part of her presentation to talk to an audience of primarily African-American high school kids about the things that they should claim that were theirs, as well as the things that they knew to be theirs. She was speaking specifically about Shakespeare. And she got on, as only Maya can, a kind of a preach about you just claim everything that's yours and you speak about it because you have to, because that's your responsibility. And God gave you what God gave you and you need to use it. And it was a pretty powerful rant. And I grew up in a black neighborhood, speaking Greek and Spanish as my first languages, and then having English as a third language. And my ear, believe you me, remains extremely confused. And the one language I had never allowed myself to claim was black language, black speech, because I, for one thing, I was already too confused, and for another, it seemed I hadn't felt I had the right to. And so Maya gave me permission that day to claim that language. And this is the poem that came of it. It's called Swallow Wings. I've been to church, folks. I'm an East Side Mexican Greek, and I've been to church. I'm here to say I grew up hearing folks sing over hard times in the key of, girl, it ain't nothing about letting go of this life. I grew up in a hood where every day at noon, black girls at Ralph Waldo Emerson Junior High School made a sacred drum of the corner mailbox, beating on it to raise the dead and make them dance. I grew up reading in the George Washington Carver Library and marveling at the white lightning gloves that top ladies of distinction use for church. I grew up where grits is indeed groceries, and a huge mountain of a woman passed my house daily, always saying the same thing. Your name Rosemary. My name Rosemary too. I grew up, folks, and I've been down till I couldn't get no more down in me. And now a preacher lady come to town and caused me to paint my face and put on some good clothes and go to church. And I'm here to say I have a right to take this stone, cause it ain't nothing about letting go of this life. Swallows keep making their wings out to be commas on the sky. World keeps saying, and. I think I'm going to read something newer. I'm going to skip back and forth a little bit tonight. This is a piece that kind of examines the vagaries and quirks of memory. But I think maybe all poetry does that. But at any rate, it refers to a landmark in San Antonio, my hometown. It's called Restoration of the Cathedral. And it has an epigraph from Elizabeth Hardwick, "And what you want from the lost things will present itself." Hidden in a book, a note to myself that says, "Remember the yellow sashes," which I do not. Then Magda, who teaches Polish, "Whatever was meant by this is lost, gone beyond memory to a hazy province where the past accumulates, a lottery of vague detail that shifts and turns on itself, to be thrown up at any moment in some new guise. The yellow sashes, for example, have become the sunlit tiles that once paved the great dome of San Fernando. A bright yellow crown bordered with cobalt and meant to echo the promise of heaven for generations wearing the hopeful white suits and dresses of first communions, quinceañeras, weddings. Tired old men in stained khakis enthroned on their park benches in the plaza across the street would wave and cluck their tongues at the processions, go back to predicting when and how long it would rain by the cuneiform of blackbirds perched on the dome at sunset. Once an old produce worker called Tio Lupe told me, Pancho Villa was a good man, but he should have done something else. When the time came, they shot him because he was for the poor people. He should have done something else. Not a wisdom, Lupe fully believed, but a poor man's way of telling himself his life had been all it could be. The long nights sorting onions in open sheds, lifting, rolling, weighing, fingernails forever sore at the corners. Now machines do his job, and the yellow tiles are gone from the church, deemed by architects to be mere 19th century afterthoughts, ruining the purity of the dome. The simple fact of yellow tiles that had been there longer than anybody alive, lost like so much memory to the harsh work of faithful restoration. A rearrangement of heaven Lupe wouldn't recognize, nor Magdalena, who knew no Polish and wanted more than anything to marry my Uncle Carlos. A posed snapshot from 1947, taken a few weeks before the engagement was broken off. A wide, open face, pompadour, thick brows, and still no hint in the eyes that nothing would ever be the same again. I'm going to skip back into, again for the first time, to a poem that only yesterday struck me to be related to one I'm going to read later. Only in that it participates in something that has always interested me a great deal, and that is the intersection or the borders, depending on how you think of borders. Because I come from border country, borders are central to me. I never think of borders as the edges of things. I think of them as the middles of things. And I've always been interested in the borders or the intersections between personal history and public history, community history. And this poem, which was written almost 20 years ago, deals with some of those kinds of intersections. It's called From Bolivia, After All This Time. From so very far away, on footpath, road, and trail, through jungle, on mountains, past ancient cities with men and old women and kitchens and love beds impressed in their silent stone bellies. Cities whose entrails of doorsteps and streets and sewers and altars long ago swallowed all time, all hope, all desire from so many lives, all in one quick gulp of a sundial. Past feathered gods who still wield enough terrible grimace to fling us down, to cut out our beating hearts, to call us by the name of sacrifice. Past desperate Spaniards maddened by an alien sun into agonizing wet dreams of coffins made of gold. Past bloody and tattered saints, left for dead in the churches, left to the children of mourning and their children's children. Past your own instant of life with its love letters to strangers, its quiet addiction to magic, its staring into the dark at love, its promise to match death, fruit for fruit, word for word, joy for joy, when the time comes. From so very far away, and after all this time, you arrive, my mother's surname burning your mouth with its history, chiseled into the bone of your forehead, lost in your eyes, your gestures. The name that made my mother with her sometimes sorrowful whispering to herself, her habit lately of laughing long and hard, her dancing hands that perhaps in ecstasy made love to open my door onto this world. The name that gave my grandfather his scholar's smile, the name that made him a descendant of bell makers, a fanatic for just the right ring and tone. The name that took my grandmother far away from her intended life with a jungle hammock, a fan, a flame tree. Away from a man who was her horizon, her very earth and air and light, and buried her here instead in the same grave as the name, lying in an ancient pose on top of my grandfather, a gentle lie she had made herself learn to love. This is what you bring with this name, this thieving name, this bleeding name, this godly and worldly name, this name of charity, this name of music, this name preserved in far-flung roses, in your voice, your face, your work. This is what you call up out of me, causing me to mourn and castigate and celebrate all in the same breath. How can you suggest that beauty hides itself? How can you say we have no past? You, bringing this much in a name by chance through all these centuries, my cousin, my blood, my lover. And I think I'm going to read, because it's almost a must, to admit that one has a poem about writing poetry. We don't like to admit it, but we all have them. And we pretend that they're not that, I think, often. I pretended this wasn't that for a long time, and then I finally faced it. And so that's what it is. Pardon me. There are some words of Spanish maybe I need to say to you here. Chicharras are cicadas. And querido is beloved. The title of the poem is Listen, Querido, They're Playing Our Song, or Summer Ritual with a Poet Friend. You arrive every year with the worst heat, always on one of those killer days when dogs won't come out from under cars after 9 in the morning. And even the neighborhood madman leaves off his battle with the gods and stands mostly in the thin shade of a phone pole with his arms folded and staring straight ahead. Always on one of those consuming afternoons when every nerve is uncovered and it burns the insides to breathe. And the chicharras keep saying over and over again how much has been lost or forgotten, or left unsaid. And the only thing for it is to drink beer after beer in Salinas's air-conditioned bar and play pool with strangers and make the best of it. But I digress. I was saying how you always show up in flames, a sheaf of palms hanging from your elbow, and how you ask your same few questions, and how your eyes always look away before the answers have a chance to stir up even a little breeze. Always nervous, always a little fearful, as though the heat might want to make an example of us for our attempts to master the spaces between feeling as well as feeling itself. As though we had not had years of practice withholding our hearts in the fire and at the last minute snatching them back. Back to some newer things. This piece is called Glassworks. She's five when she sees the chain, when the grandmother threatens to hang her in a closet. Bury her under the prized hibiscus in a starched white organdy dress that will stay clean forever. The father claims his rights, one rod by day, another by night. The mother needs glasses to see up close, tells of her own closets in the dark after the father has sunk into dreamless sleep. The child doesn't dream either. Only concentric circles, white on black, swallowing her again, again, until the stifled scream. Family circles, chains of nightshade, make yourself very small, attract no attention, she whispers to the alley stones and bits of colored glass hidden in her pillow. Some days she plays under a green chenille bedspread draped over the scar clawfoot table. This is my house where what I can't see me. The one doll has eyes that won't open, a cracked jaw. Came in trade from Lake Surplus, where the father installed glass for whatever he could get. Mother and child waited in the truck with old tools, rags, a broken ladder. The child imagines heat waves shimmering herself at the edge of the lake, then in the lake, a slow walk, waist, shoulders, neck, her gaze fixed on Our Lady in the church tower who hears her vow to break the circle. Have no baby. 30 years later, still swimming against the current of sick blood, she clutches a piece of broken glass. She tells the doctors the first glass was formed by lightning, that she has no last name. They may call her Ophelia. In thinking about doing this reading, I was having a hard time trying to come up with some things that wouldn't make everybody depressed. But I don't. I have to say, I don't have just a whole lot of those. I don't know. It's the dictates of experience, perhaps. But I do hope that that there is some rescue and redemption involved in some of the pieces. And this piece was trying to do that for years, I want to say. Those of you who are writing, you know that a piece can start and not become itself, no matter how much you want it to or how hard you work on it. And then suddenly one day it does become itself, and you're almost not in it, which is kind of nice when that happens. And this was a piece that I was trying to write with, for, on behalf of, through my grandmother for years, and it finally became itself. It's called Women Talk of Flowers at Dusk, and it's set in San Antonio in 1976, which is the year my grandmother died, and Mérida, Yucatan in 1909. Some things can only be spoken in the dark, you'd say each time you told about Dolores, a name that means pain. We'd sit in dimming light at the chipped kitchen table where the past showed in layers of old paint. Exile from Mexico, your forced marriage, the Great Depression. You with a cigarette and a shot of Paul Jones, a brittle voice telling how your mother died in the half light of cheap rented rooms in the Turks' barrio. She was a nurse who recognized the blood she coughed, but called it roses to ease your fears. Huacha was 12 and you 10. Even then you led. You hid in the jacaranda and, fierce with tears, barred your grandfather when he arrived too late in his fancy carriage and fine frock coat. Usted no tiene por qué estar aquí. No right to come here. You would always despise the jacaranda. Mi madre muerta, muerta, y él. He calmly sent for pins to hold the sheet tight to the body. The first Indian doctor in Mérida, he'd raised his daughter to be a lady. Not his fault she'd come to this. He wouldn't look at her wasted corpse, the flowers framing her face, the borrowed crucifix. She'd refused to stay well married, would not respect his choice and turn a deaf ear, blind eye, the other cheek to a husband cajoling conquests behind palm fans. His seed spent in every street. Instead, she'd made her own life in this damp barrio, nursing a company of women, the poor, everything her father struggled to forget. The funeral wagon stopped at the corner, too wide for the narrow alley. You, your sister, some Indian women wept at the gate. Only men were allowed at the grave. But he couldn't go and couldn't escape the wild marigold that fell from her temple as they hoisted her onto the pauper's dray. That sight was a slap, grandmother, that stung his face then and every time you told the story. Even now the flame of that marigold is in me. You gone these 15 years, Dolores almost a century. So too, it's come to me to heal the roses in the blood, a need to let go of the sins of the fathers, open the dark vaults of the heart. Let me begin here, in lives that are and are not my own, to forgive even the jacaranda that blooms and blooms without mercy. Um, I want to read this piece because it comes from the Greek side of my heritage. And it is true, which is to say, I saw a man do this and then later made up the reason why he'd done it. It's called Insufficient Light. Under the stairs, the light is going faster than in the courtyard where Yanni strikes sand from the hems of his trousers, and only that briefly knows the woman is weeping in the shadows. That her tears are partly his doing, that the light's going is not, but is somehow related. Dusk catches in the crook of her elbow, in the sleeve she raises to wipe her face, embracing odors of fish, basil, roses hard won from rocky soil. But now the sand is off his clothes, Yanni turns away, demands the coffee be set to boil, their little bread divided. Years later, Yanni sits alone in the courtyard at dusk, gazing at a cat near the boats. He suddenly recalls how the woman wept and is confused by the terrible bellow that rises out of him, the way he smashes his cane against the whitewashed wall under the stairs, his wanting to stroke her hair in the going light. I have a friend in Texas who is a painter, and about 5 years ago now, we went to look for his mother's grave, which he had not seen since he was 4 years old, and that was an amazing and important experience to share with somebody. It was on the Day of the Dead, which maybe you celebrate here. Do you have Day of the Dead celebrations? And families go to the cemeteries, Latino families primarily go to the cemeteries and hang with their dead all night and drink and eat and tell stories. So we had shared that experience, and then about a year ago, I got a postcard from him that referred to that, and this poem came out of receiving that postcard. It's a little difficult to read because much of it is spoken in his voice, so I'll do these little signs that will indicate to you that I am not speaking, but he is, when the voice changes. It's called Flowers and Umbrellas on a Texas Beach, postcard from a painter. It's for René Anguiano. Slick tourist photo, umbrellas and sling chairs in neat royal blue. Everyone faces the sea, except one lone man, unsheltered, thrown down between water's edge and flowers rioting foreground. One lone man daring the blaze to do more than it already has, looking it in the eye. He's almost lost in masses of flowers, umbrellas in reverse. Thin-skinned trumpets blown inside out, hot pink with screaming red throats. Morning glory shaped, but it's high noon. Can you see it? Vines, all right, but low to the ground, no place to climb, spilling across the dunes, froth on a dry ocean. He can deal with contradictions. Up close, the leaves are fat and succulent, seem gentle. The man remembers. Moray air outside Cthulhu that day, full of heat waves. Air that made you see things, promised water, love, safety, when there was nothing but brush country. We didn't know to call it moray then, didn't think it was fancy air, just hell. Americano said, hotter'n spit on a griddle. We said, más calor que el quinto infierno, Dante's fifth circle. We didn't know Dante either, that's just what we'd always called it. Cthulhu is 2 hours from the sea. The rare curve in the flat-out road took him by surprise. He wasn't from around there. My mother made a red star in the windshield. He died too. I've tried to paint a big 57 Olds gone soft as a desert flower, fat, lushly turned and seeming gentle. Can you see it? He had touched me in the wrong places, alcohol, his own childhood. My real father long gone. I never told because she would sing when this one came around. Sing and paint her face. I barely remember. Closest I've come to her is a painting I did from a snapshot, one my grandfather took. Cheap rayon dress, a flower in her hair, an old tire slanting in the background. The runt dog must have barked. I glued blue and green sequins around her, floated it all in thick tropical leaves, nothing like Cthulhu. Can you see it? Then that day at San Fernando, Dia de los Muertos, everybody with their marigolds and kids, oval portraits of the dead embedded in the headstones. I thought we'd never find her. All those years without seeing the grave. Since I was 4. The blue umbrellas side by side, the people looking away. They are a dotted line on the horizon, separating heaven from what he keeps trying to make out. I've done everything without her. Can you see it? Are you there? Let me know if you come to Texas. Let's see, I'm bringing myself down here. We need a little bit of lightness. This piece is a border piece. There's a whole border culture in South Texas, as I'm sure there is here, that participates in how you go across the border. It's a big deal. Everybody has their little rituals. And in Tejas, one of the rituals is that we keep a lot of coins in the ashtray. That's including whether cigarette butts are in there or not. People keep coins in the ashtray because that's what you give to cross the border. And that's what started this piece, that image. It's called Borderline, Brownsville, Matamoros. It's for Oscar Ramirez. South Texas car ashtrays are kept full of change, coins to pave the way across the river and back. Going either direction, we fix our eyes on that elusive spot somewhere up ahead, where everything comes together, the kind of border we all want. Like old Yusuf Assad in the dying downtown, who keeps selling cheap plastic lace Last Supper tablecloths to send money home. The matter of a sister who never married. Here he lives out his summer figs, the stunted cedar at his door, force-feeding them on memory. Try telling him about borders. That someday you look across the distance and sure enough, the big things are closer, the small things farther away. He wants to believe you, has staked a lifetime on the possibility of just this perspective. Same as the rest of us at Pappas's godforsaken dustbin of a cafe. All the pies raisin until we look hard and see the flies move. We look hard for all the good it does, then go on faith. I tell you, brother, there are crossings everywhere, places where we're made to show ourselves, act like we know what we're doing. So great is our need that if we got our hands on the stars, we'd bite down on them like coin. And even if they proved counterfeit, tender their wholesale brightness for safe passage. And I'm going to read just two more. This is the other piece that I referred to earlier that participates in that same kind of obsession with the intersections of personal and public history, collective history. I don't think there's any language I need to explain to you here. Maybe the ocarina. The ocarina is a clay instrument, musical instrument. It's called Pumpkins by the Sea, and it has an epigraph from Gerald Stern. What does it mean, one life only? On an incline between sleep and waking, a dream snags, confused in the ripples and eddies of a window filling with pink and gray dawn. The house is old, its glass original and given to warps, bubbles, bends. It is a year ago on a wide bluff over the sea, a farm carpeted with pumpkins that seem to spill off the edge, abundant as molten lava. We wander, we choose. How the wind awakens waves in the chamois-colored grass is different from the way it chisels the sea. Different from the way it lifts our hair or suddenly scatters clouds of tiny birds on the beach. Some pumpkins are small and yellow, and in a trick of perception, the mind's eye joins them to exhausted Beograd's beat-up taxis, the only bright spots left in that gray city. Dream does this, or nightmare. An old man's faltering voice last week from Dubrovnik, 80 years in the house where he was born, now he boards the last boat out to where? His milky eyes could just make out guns pointed by countrymen. Born in other houses, it's true, speaking another tongue. But human, no? We have learned nothing, he says, straining for a last glimpse of the medieval walls. In the field by the sea, there are pumpkins orange as the banks of marigolds flanking my altar each day of the dead. photographs of the missing, their favorite food and drink, friends and family up all night to pray and remember. I hand you a stout heart-shaped fruit as I did that day a year ago. But in the queer logic of dream, the ripe flesh turns mineral when you touch it. And after a bitter kiss, sweet when we lived it, all the pumpkins have become tombstones. This will always be ours, you say. And I wonder if you mean the heart, as I trusted you did then, or the harvest of stones. At the window, I watch doves string their hammocks of flight between eaves and feeder, binding grief to need, need to grief. Pink feet lost against pink sky, their bodies gray tears. No, it's their sound that mourns, the hollow clay lament of an ocarina. The tears are mine. Or are the doves another ruse of the flawed glass? Have I even gone to the window, or am I still here under a scrap cloth quilt, wet cheeks colder than the unheated room? We wander, we choose. The lazy eye you've battled since childhood veers even more off, tilts at its own history. What are we to make of it? Small boy whose sleep still shrieks at the cold cast iron tub where they beat him. Tell me this. What is the clearest view through warp? Need to say we've learned nothing. And last, I'm going to read a poem for child I saw in San Antonio. I worked, the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center is right across from an elementary school in the barrio. And this little boy came out one day on the last day of school and did a remarkable little dance with his school papers. And as a matter of fact, I went and collected the papers afterward. And so a lot of the material in the poem is actually from his papers, which I still have to this day. I gave him the name of David Talamantes, although that wasn't his name. And there are places where he is writing, and again, I'll use a little signal to indicate that it's his language. David Talamantes on the last day of second grade. David Talamantes, whose mother is at work, leaves his mark everywhere in the schoolyard, tosses pages from a thick sheaf of lined paper high in the air one by one, watches them catch on the teacher's car bumpers, drift into the chalky, narrow shade of the water fountain. One last batch, stapled together, he rolls tight into a makeshift horn through which he shouts, David, and David, yes, before hurling it away hard and darting across Brussels Street against the light. The little sag of head and shoulders when, safe on the other side, he kicks a can in the gutter and wanders toward home. David Talamantes believes birds are warm-blooded, the way they are quick in the air and give out long strings of complicated music, different all the time, not like cats and dogs. For this, he was marked down in science, and for putting his name in the wrong place, on the right with the date instead of on the left with science questions, and for not skipping a line between his heading and his answers. The X's for wrong things are bigger, much bigger, than David Talamantes' tiny writing. Write larger, his teacher says, in red ink across the tops of many pages. Messy, she says, on others where he has erased and started over, erased and started over. Spelling, language expression, sentences using the following words. Neck. I have a neck name. No. 20s. 30s. Think again. He's good in art, though. Makes 70 on Reading Station Artist's Corner, where he's traced and colored an illustration from Henny Penny. A goose with red and white striped shirt, a hen in a turquoise dress. Points off for the birds, cloud, and butterfly he's drawn in freehand. Not in the original picture. 25 points off for writing nothing in the blank after, this is my favorite scene in the book because. There's a page called Rules. Listen, always working, stay in your seat, raise your hand before you speak, no fighting, be quiet. Rules copied from the board, no grade, only a huge red check mark. Later, there is a test on rules. Listen, alle erking, sast in aus neat, rouse own before your spick, no funning, be kite. He gets 70 on rules, 10 on spelling. An old man stoops to pick up a crumpled drawing of a large family crowded around a table, an apartment with bars on the windows in Alasan courts, a huge sun in one corner saying, too much noise. After correcting the spelling, the grade is 90. Nice details. And there's another mark on this paper and all the others. The one in the doorway of La Rosa Beauty Shop. The one that blew under the pool table at La Tenampa. The ones the older kids have wadded up like big spitballs. The ones run over by cars. On every single page, David Talamantes has crossed out the teacher's red numbers and written in giant letters, blue ink. Yes, David, yes. Thank you.
I love it. I'm going to have some water. Anybody want? Yeah. Nice. Yeah, it'd be nice to get a tape for the PC library. Rose Murray sends her.